This free State of Belief radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief. I'm your host, Welton Getty. We're broadcasting from Argo Studios in New York City. On today's show, the controversy over building an Islamic center near Ground Zero, which is just down the road from where I am right now, shows no signs of being resolved. How are Muslim Americans reacting to this controversy? And what misconceptions might Americans be holding against the Muslim community? Salam El Mariani of the Muslim Public Affairs Council will join us to answer these important questions. Also, I'll offer some of my own thoughts on the Islamic Center controversy. Plus, last week, advocates of religious freedom won a major victory in Utah. A federal court of appeals panel ruled that the state of Utah violated the Constitution when it erected giant metal crosses as memorials to fallen state troopers. We'll talk to Brian Bernard, the lawyer who challenged Utah, and I'm going to ask him whether he expects any problems from the U.S. Supreme Court. But first, as the oil cleanup efforts continue along the Gulf Coast, I think it's time to take stock of what role the religious community plays in Washington in the fight to protect the environment. The United States is the most religiously diverse nation in the world, and our various scriptures speak in dramatic unanimity in charging the faithful to be good stewards of the earth. President Obama campaigned on a pledge to cap carbon emissions to reduce global warming, and his policy was not all that different from the one endorsed by Senator John McCain. Despite this, the so-called cap-and-trade bill is stalled in Congress. Intense lobbying is taking place on both sides of this issue, but the supporters of this bill include some very unlikely allies. The Southern Baptist Convention has joined the National Council of Churches and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops in support of a climate change bill. Joining us now to talk more about this divisive issue is Mallory McDuff, professor of environmental studies at Warren Wilson College. She's the author of a new book called Natural Saints: How People of Faith Are Working to Save God's Earth. She joins us now by phone from her office in North Carolina. Professor McDuff, welcome to State of Belief.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I know that you work broadly in the environmental field, but I mentioned just now in the introduction this piece of legislation that's working its way through Congress and the coalition of religious groups. Are you impressed with the number of religious groups that have been active in supporting this climate change bill?
Yes, it really just, to me, has become, I think the environment has become a common denominator for religious groups. There's a study by the Pew Forum that found that the environment brought diverse religious traditions together as an issue, as opposed to issues like abortion or gay marriage that become divisive issues. So I really think the environment has the potential to shape our narrative as people of faith, and our narrative being shaped in that way towards building communities where children can walk to each other's houses, where we're eating healthy food, mm-hmm. and where we're really modeling our religious principles in our lives.
How, if at all, will the BP oil spill affect the debates over climate change, alternative energy sources, and this inform this passion about the environment?
Well, it's funny because your question brings up a very personal connection to the Gulf Coast, as I grew up on the Alabama Gulf Coast, and so when the oil spill happened, like so many people became obsessed with the news and watching the spill just literally emanate on our computer screens and in the news. In New Orleans, actually the end of this month, there's a meeting of diverse religious leaders. Even after the oil spill is not predominant in the headlines as it was this summer, religious leaders are thinking about what can we do? Mm-hmm. How can we come together? And so I do feel that it's served to continue to galvanize faith communities to act together and see this as both urgent from a practical environmental level as well as a moral imperative.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, and just one more question about the climate bill, do you think that this almost voice of unanimity among religious leaders will advance the prospects of this bill becoming law?
I certainly hope so. No one can predict the future, and as you and many of your listeners know, the timeline of climate change activities and legislation in the U.S. is long, and it's experienced a lot of setbacks. But what I'm seeing is people continuing to say, we're not going to give up this, and we're going to continue to lobby our legislators, and we're also going to continue to work on the state level. Mm-hmm. So that's one shift that I'm seeing is people saying, okay, let's continue to do work, but let's not wait for the feds.
Right. It's not all in Washington. And you did research for your book, I think, that showed dramatically how various communities are working on protecting the environment in a lot of locations. Tell us about some of your findings there.
Sure. Well, just specifically one related to the climate bill, in Washington State, I was able to spend time with the organization Earth Ministry, which is based in Seattle, but they work broadly on both national and state legislation around climate issues and diverse environmental issues. But most specifically, I'll just give an example of climate, some of their climate action. Mm-hmm. They actually are working to bring religious leaders, interfaith religious leaders, and legislators together to transition the state from coal to clean energy by 2015.
I know this is going to sound strange to you, but I want you to answer a question that I still often get from some people. What does religion have to do with the environment?
Oh, it doesn't. Yeah, that doesn't sound strange to me at all. And I, for me, if you ask the basic question, where do people experience their deepest spiritual moments? That question, for many people, gets to the core.
Yeah.
Of the answer. And it doesn't have to be, you know, here in North Carolina, I live on a college with 1,000 acres with pastoral views. But I firmly believe that spiritual connection to earth can happen anywhere and does happen anywhere in urban settings, in suburban settings. It doesn't matter where, but that's the long answer to your question is that I believe many of us experience deep spiritual connection to place. It doesn't have to be a green place.
My guest has been Mallory McDuff, a professor of environmental studies at Warren Wilson College. Her new book is Natural Saints, How People of Faith Are Working to Save God's Earth. Mallory, I really do appreciate the work that you're doing, and I am thankful for you being on State of Belief.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
I'm Welton Gaddy. This is State of Belief. Later on, I'll share with you some of my own thoughts on the tension over building an Islamic center near Ground Zero. But up next, we travel out to Utah to learn more about a recent court decision that protects the boundaries between religion and government. We won this one, folks. Will the U.S. Supreme Court weigh in on the case? Stay tuned. State of Belief is coming right back. Welcome back to State of Belief, everyone. I'm Welton Getty. You might remember that earlier this summer, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a ruling that disappointed many advocates for the separation of church and state. The case called Salazar v. Buono involved a challenge to a wooden cross displayed on a federally owned nature preserve in the California desert. Once the lawsuit began, Congress stepped in and transferred a small strip of land on which that cross sits into private hands. You see, the First Amendment only applies to governmental action, not private action. So this move was made to short-circuit the lawsuit by making the cross a private display. The court allowed the cross to remain, and some of the justices also speculated that the cross should not be thought of as a universal symbol of just religion, but it could be a universal symbol of death. In other words, the cross can be a secular symbol. Well, I know that's a hard pill to swallow. The cross is a secular symbol. Well, this issue is still being litigated, and just last week, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals handed down a ruling in another case striking down a public display of crosses. In Utah, giant crosses have been erected on public land to honor state troopers who've been killed in the line of duty. A panel of judges on the 10th Circuit concluded that the display amounted to an endorsement of religion. Joining us by phone now from Utah is Brian Bernard, the attorney who represented the group American Atheists who challenged the public crosses. Brian, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thank you.
The Utah Highway Patrol Association had argued that these crosses were secular in nature because their purpose was to recognize death and service, not Christianity. How did the 10th Circuit Court handle that particular issue?
They simply said, in the context that these crosses are presented, that argument didn't fly, that these crosses, most of them stand alone. There isn't any other context, and they're 12 feet tall, they're stark white, and for a passing motorist going at 55 plus miles per hour, what that motorist sees is a cross, a Christian cross, and the reasonable observer, which is the standard used by the courts, the reasonable observer sees a Christian cross. Mm-hmm. And for the state of Utah and the Utah Highway Patrol Association to suggest that Christianity is not the first thing that comes to that observer's mind, that argument was rejected by the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals.
Now, I'm going to ask you a question that would cause you to be the judge, not the lawyer, but it's a question that I try to answer. When advocates like the Utah Highway Patrol Association advance this argument that the cross can be a secular symbol, I have to ask, do they really think that argument is true? I mean, I'm sure there are many faithful Christians in that organization, but do they really believe the most basic symbol of their religion is secular, or are they just trying to say anything that helps them win a case?
I personally am troubled when attorneys make that kind of argument, or when groups like the Utah Highway Patrol Association make that argument. It's troubling because I think to most people, there isn't any question that a Roman cross, especially a 12-foot-tall, stark white Roman cross, is unquestionably a religious symbol.
It seems to me that allowing the cross to become a secular symbol actually hurts Christianity. And I'm wondering, have you heard from many Christians who support your side in this debate?
Well, here locally, the response in the letters to the editor and the newspaper seems to be about 50-50 in support of our position. And people responding in the newspapers in that are saying, how can the state of Utah, how can the Utah Highway Patrol Association argue the cross is not religious in nature? And yes, that there's a reaction saying, wait a minute, we should honor these troopers. And that unquestionably, we should honor these troopers. But we can do that in a way that doesn't emphasize religion and doesn't emphasize one religion to the exclusion of others. So yes, there is support for us and for our position saying, let's honor these troopers. Let's do it in a way that doesn't emphasize one religion.
You know, I think of that old cliche about winning a battle and losing the war, and it's almost as if these people are saying, we want to post Christian crosses all over Utah, and we're going to get that done even if we have to say the cross isn't Christian.
Well, one of the comments that was made at the trial court level in this case is that the Roman cross is now the equivalent of a Christmas tree, that it has lost its religious meaning. And I personally would not make that kind of argument. Mm-hmm. I personally find that kind of argument offensive to Christians.
Yeah, I agree. Are you worried that the U.S. Supreme Court will overturn the judgment in your case as being inconsistent with the Supreme Court's recent decision in the other cross case?
The other cross case, the Mojave Desert cross case, really didn't deal with the issue that's presented in our case. The next step, however, in our case is both the state of Utah and the Utah Highway Patrol Association have indicated they're going to ask for a rehearing in bank before the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. So they're going to ask all of the judges in the 10th Circuit to reconsider what the three-judge panel did last week. Mm-hmm. And they're going to ask that all of the judges reconsider. And they're going to file a petition next month asking the 10th Circuit to reconsider. So
are you scared of that?
I think that the facts and the law are strongly on our side.
Brian Barnard is an attorney in Utah who represented the group American Atheists in this important, important religious freedom case. And I thank you very much for walking us through this case and for being with us again on State of Belief.
Thank you.
Later in the show, I'll offer you my take on the still lingering controversy about building an Islamic center near Ground Zero. Up next, though, on State of Belief, we'll be joined by a prominent Muslim advocate to ask him how his community is handling this controversy. This is State of Belief. We'll be right back. We're brought to you by the Interfaith Alliance. Please be here when I return. This free State of Belief radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. This is State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. The proposal to build an Islamic center near Ground Zero has generated a lot, an incredible amount of media attention over the past few weeks. Wild accusations have been levied against the imam of the proposed center, as well as accusations against Islam itself. Now, frankly, it saddens me that nearly 10 years after September 11, 2001, so many Americans have so little understanding of and respect for our Muslim brothers and sisters. Franks, it's time for a reality check. We need to separate the truth from fiction about the third largest religion in the United States, and we need to reflect on how these anti-Islam protests are impacting Muslims, both at home and abroad. Part of the mission of the Interfaith Alliance is to educate our country about the values of religious pluralism. And I can think of few people better suited to that task than our next guest. Salam El-Mariati is president of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, an organization dedicated to establishing a vibrant Muslim American community that will enrich American society. He recently wrote an article for the Huffington Post entitled, Five Questions Swirling Around the Ground Zero Mosque Debate. Salam is a respected voice in the Muslim community. He is a good friend of mine. Salam El-Mariati, welcome back to State of Belief.
Thank you very much, Welton.
Salam, when I read your piece for the Huffington Post this week, I reacted by saying, great, that is precisely the kind of information that we need, because you addressed some of the questions about Islam that keep popping up and deserve clear answers. So I want us to begin by talking about some of those questions. And let's begin with Sharia law. What does Sharia law mean to most American Muslims?
Well, Sharia is God's will to establish justice, mercy, and compassion on earth. And in the Quran, there are principles that are found that we must pursue, the principles I just mentioned, and there are things that we need to do as individuals, such as prayer and fasting, and these are all part of what we consider to be the Quranic mandate for the individual to purify him or herself and to be ready to work for justice.
Well said. Salam, you also rebut the myth that having Muslims in this country damages our national security. Now, I know, for example, that there have been Muslims in this country almost since the beginning of this country. So it was not a complaint in the past. Why is that a complaint now?
You mean a complaint by the others?
Yeah, from others, that having Muslims in this country damages our national security.
Yes, exactly. Well, again, I think this is just another canard to push onto the American public discourse and really create apprehensions and create this notion that the Muslim community should be a suspect community, just like it was done to Japanese Americans in World War II. This is exactly what's being done to Muslim Americans today. Now, having said that, what is our responsibility as Muslim Americans? We are actually part of the answer to our national security problems. We are the ones that authentically can counter the Al-Qaeda narrative that America is at war with Islam. The other side, unfortunately, is just continuing to perpetuate this notion that America is at war with Islam by telling Muslims they can't have a mosque in this area. And it's not just in New York City. It's in Tennessee. It's in Arizona. It's in California. They want to burn the Quran in Florida on 9/11. So those people are the ones that are promoting the myth that America is at war with Islam. We're the ones that are countering Al-Qaeda. And I think we as Muslim Americans, integrated, adjusted, socially accepted in American pluralism, are Al-Qaeda's nightmare. And unfortunately, we are not utilized in terms of countering that narrative enough times. And as a result, we feel that that is a loss for our national security interests.
Okay, here's another statement that unfortunately we hear. It's either posed as a question or sometimes just offered as a declaration. So I'll ask it to you as a question. Do Muslims want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth?
No, we want to make sure that Palestine is not wiped off the face of the earth. We are against anyone that wants to wipe out Israel. We condemned Ahmadinejad when he made that horrible statement about wiping off Israel. So we want to see peace in the Middle East. We know that the only way to have peace is first and foremost make peace between Palestinians and Israelis, but that necessitates a Palestinian state, which unfortunately is the one that is off the table. And so we work for the establishment of a Palestinian state because that will bring security to Israel and that will be in America's best interest.
The Muslim Public Affairs Council just released a new video entitled Injustice Cannot Defeat Injustice. Please tell our listeners about this project and how they could see it or get to it.
Well, it's on YouTube and it's on our website, www.MPAC, stands for Muslim Public Affairs Council.org. And what we did is we took nine prominent American Muslim scholars and just have them comment on the propaganda from Al-Qaeda in trying to recruit young Muslim Americans. And so these Muslim scholars are actually speaking in the video to young Muslims saying, don't be fooled by this propaganda. This is not Islam. What Islam is, it stands for life. What they stand for is a cult of death. So I really encourage people to watch that video. But most importantly, it's so that our young Muslim Americans do not feel alienated from mainstream American society, number one, and number two, that they understand that Islam represents the theology of life. What Al-Qaeda represents is the cult of death and destruction that will not give them any hope. It will actually lead to their own, to further despair and to more depression.
Salam, I don't want to impose my feelings on you, so I'll ask the question rather than make an assumption. But sometimes when you go home at night and you're tired from all of this work and the controversy, do you feel a little hurt or a little sad that after all of these years that we're still addressing these basic questions about Islam?
Yes, I do. I mean, I feel sad for my fellow American people. They do not see the truth that you and I see, Welton. They do not see the truth of Muslim Americans working every day in their neighborhoods to contribute to America, doctors, engineers, teachers, people in the workforce as well. This is what American Islam is all about. And also, they don't see the opportunity of making America a stronger and more prosperous nation by accepting Muslims in our pluralism. And at the same time, I'm saddened by many Muslim Americans who do feel more alienated by this propaganda and this Islamophobia, because that does not help our Muslim American community at all. We have to accept America for no matter what is happening in the political arena, because we believe that America is our best hope to form a progressive corpus of thinking for Islam and Muslims, not only for Muslim Americans, but for the whole Muslim peoples throughout the world, because when we see young women who are stoned or mutilated, unfortunately, in the name of Islam, this saddens us even more, and we want to see reform within the Muslim community. So for both my fellow Americans, my fellow Muslim Americans, I am saddened, but at the same time, this is what drives me every day to go out and work even more for truth. And it also gives me an opportunity to meet great people like you, because I feel that our partnership is part of the answer for a better America and for a better American Muslim community.
Well, thank you so much. Salam, I have to point out, Fox News has been leading the charge against building this Muslim Cultural Center. In particular, they've been drumming up fear over where the funding for the building is coming from. As you know, I've raised the question, that's a fair question, but we also need to know where's the funding coming from in all of this opposition to the mosque. But Fox has persisted, and they have neglected to mention that one of the founders that they have criticized as anti-American is a co-owner of Fox News.
I know. That's hilarious.
Do you think, I mean, should the Muslim community boycott Fox?
Well, I don't know about boycotting, but I think you're bringing up a good point, not only from, you know, certain media outlets like Fox News, but, you know, certain politicians who, you know, are riding their high on the, horse and have this moral superiority complex and pointing fingers when, in fact, if you look to a number of politicians in the past 30, 40 years, they've had businesses with the same people they criticize Muslims in terms of having associations with, not funding from, but associations with. So it is an outrage. However, my organization has made it clear that even though it is not a criminal act to accept funding from overseas, we feel that it is in the best interest of the Muslim American community to only accept money from American residents and American citizens to preserve the American Muslim identity so that intellectually and financially we are free. We may be poor as a result, but at least we are free. It's better to be free and poor than to be rich and enslaved or subordinate to a group overseas. So we feel it's in the best interest of the Muslim American community to pursue that policy, and we encourage Park 51 to do exactly the same.
Salam El-Mariati is president of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, an organization dedicated to establishing a vibrant Muslim American community that will enrich American society. He's the author of an article for the Huffington Post. I hope you'll look it up. The article's entitled Five Questions Swirling Around the Ground Zero Mosque Debate. Salam's a bright guy. You can learn from his insights. I think he and I both are convinced that something good ultimately can come from this controversy, and some of the insights Salam has given us today offer proof of that fact. Salam, thank you so much for being with us on State of Belief.
Thank you so much, Weldon. Always a pleasure.
There's still more to come on State of Belief. When we come back, I'll give you my thoughts concerning the so-called Ground Zero Mosque. Stay tuned, please. We'll be right back. Welcome back to State of Belief, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. Before we go today, I want to leave you with some of my own thoughts. The controversy, which continues to swirl cyclonically around a proposed Islamic Studies Center in Lower Manhattan, illustrates the fragility of our nation's commitment to religious freedom. As you well know, that bothers me greatly, and I have to tell you, it also frightens me. One of the foundations of this government is shaking. One word encapsulates the problem grammatically, politically, and ideologically. That is the little word, but. The conjunction, B-U-T. This word is like a direction changer in the debate. I've heard it more than I want ever to hear it. Listen. I believe Muslims have a right to build an Islamic cultural center a few blocks from Ground Zero, but, and then following that but, come statements about respecting the families who lost loved ones in the terrorist attack, reverencing space that should be considered sacred because of the lives lost there, and understanding that Americans will see the center as a celebration of the victory of terrorism, and on and on and on go the various caveats denying rights. I believe these people have the right, but. Well, first an aside. The imam and his wife, who sparked this debate when they announced a long-held dream of theirs, are Americans. They are good Americans who have worked in this area of New York for over 30 years in relationship building and cooperative efforts for positive change and as ambassadors for the United States government, both in Republican and Democratic administrations. And the response to them has been positive. They know, as we should know, that other good Americans who were Muslims also died in the terrorist murders at the World Trade Center. Now, friends, here is the fact. If these two American Muslims were to be denied the right to build a center for learning, cooperation, and prayer at the site they have chosen, that would be a blatant denial of religious freedom, a violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. You can't change that fact. The result of that broadside against democracy would leave us in a quandary regarding what other parts of our historic Constitution are up for repeal or compromise because of fear, controversy, and public pressure. Earlier this week, I was a guest on public television show The NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. In one of the clips capturing the cacophony of voices across America commenting on this issue, a man expressed fear that Islam is attempting to take over the world. Well, from that perspective, the proposed cultural center in Lower Manhattan would be a beachhead, I guess he would say, for further expansion of the religion of Islam. Now, think about that. I've been part of a Christian church all of my life, and I learned as early as I can remember that Christians want to take over the world. I know both the theology and the history related to that global intent. But that hasn't raised the shouts of fearmongers. As Salam El-Mariati has told us today, Islam is not a religion of violence. More Muslims have been murdered by terrorists than have Christians or Americans of any religion or no religion. I am grateful for people of whatever religion who want to build centers for education, mutual understanding, and cooperation. Such is the mission of all good Americans. To deny people that right is to invite ignorance, prejudice, and discord that will weaken our nation and exist as a major obstacle to community and to peace. Come on, my friends. We live in a new world. We cannot allow any but, B-U-T, to hinder support for the freedom at the center of democracy, the freedom to which we pledge allegiance, the freedom of which we speak as we say, freedom and justice for all. And those, my friends, are the final words for this week's show. Although we have to wrap things up for right now, I remind you, you can visit us anytime during the week at stateofbelief.com. And if you like what you've heard today, go tell a friend about us. Help us get the word out about this show. We want more listeners. We want to build a community of listeners and activists. And tell people to visit us online and sign up for our podcast. That's stateofbelief.com. And as always, I remind you that State of Belief is a production of Interfaith Alliance. If you want to get involved in the cause of religious liberty, join us at the Interfaith Alliance. Become a member. We need your help. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. We'll be right back here on State of Belief next week, and I hope you will join us for more stories from the intersection of religion, politics, government, and probably some surprises we don't even know about yet. But until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along.
State of Belief. Religion and radio done differently.